found this passage to be very versatile and extremely interesting. It showed the extreme amount of conflict that was within the judge in his younger years, and explains the conflict that is still within him. It shows his self-loathing, and also his loathing for his own people. In the passage where he and Bose were going to watch the changing of the guard in Buckingham Palace, and learning where to go, what to eat, what to drink, how to say the correct words, what was good in terms of English life, and what was not in terms of Indian life, it seemed that instead of erasing his Indianness or hiding it, it actually reaffirmed it, at least for the judge. And in the end, when he does learn how to, as is said on 131, glove his embarrassment and hide his accent behind a mask of quiet, he seems to become a nationless soul, hated by all, as said on 131, for what he would become, he would be despised by absolutely everyone, English and Indians both. It seems to me that he feels that in order to be better, he must become completely English, but he knows that he will never be able to. So he's stuck between this horrible place of hating what he comes from and who he essentially is, and wanting to be something that he never can be. So he's trapped somewhere in the middle. It also seems that the only time that he's really comfortable in any kind of situation, especially in a relationship, is when he's has a guarantee that no one will judge him or expose him for what he truly is. As is with Bose, as evidenced on 130, a look of recognition had passed between them at first sight, but also the assurance that they wouldn't reveal one another's secrets, not even to each other. I think this is why his relationship with Mutt is so very good. And this is sort of foreshadowed, in a way, by his relationship with the dog in the house on Thornton Road. But Mutt loves him and reveres him for what he is. And I'm not exactly sure whether or not it's because she can't understand what he is and that gives him comfort, or whether she knows but doesn't care and won't ever tell anyone. But it does seem that he's more at ease when people can't really see into what he is, or when people aren't in the same sort of position. Because earlier, on pages 119 to 120, when the judge is sort of grilling in a very mean-spirited way Guyon the tutor, he sees in Guyon something of himself, and that throws him into a reverie, into a past that he's trying to suppress, and that makes him very angry, and he lashes out at himself, but also at Guyon. Or at least it seems at Guyon. So, in a way, this passage shows, or at least gives us a basis on which to interpret, his relationship with people from here on out. Also, this passage piqued my interest because of its connection to our last book. The method in which the judge tried to immerse himself in English culture in order to become English, and learning how to say words correctly, and buying into the consumer culture of England, reminded me of Lefty from Middlesex, and also of the Ford Language School, where people of different nations and cultures went into the pot and came out as this carbon copy in a gray suit. It seemed that this transition that the judge was so eager to make was the same as the one that Lefty was so eager to make. It brought to my mind the idea that maybe the immigration story, no matter where it is, can be somewhat the same, because people are always trying to become that ideal. People are always trying to live the quote-unquote American or quote-unquote English dream. I also think it's important because it gives us a chance to juxtapose the judge's story with Bijou's story and see how time and economic change and locale affect that basic scaffolding of the immigration story.